As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene!
Eugene Fodor!
Gene, was good.
But be careful, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
The CIA really need your help, Gene.
Freeze, Americano! Huh? Oh!
Gene, run!
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, this is Kurt Woodsmith. You remember me from such TV comedies as That 70s Show and That 90s Show on Netflix. I'll never forget the words that my grandfather said just before he kicked the bucket. He said, "Watch how far I can kick this bucket." People ask me where I get my dad jokes from. I tell them to listen to the Daily Dad Jokes podcast. Listen to Daily Dad Jokes every day on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Worst Year Ever, a production of iHeartRadio.
Before we get started, I just want to make a quick correction from last week's episode on Andrew Yang. I mistakenly said that his acronym MATH stood for Make America Think, instead of what it actually stands for, which is Make America Think Harder. I must have left that off my notes. I apologize. It's very different. And a lot of people let me know, so I thank you for that. Thoughts on this new version of his slogan? That's from Sophie.
It's a better acronym.
It's better. It's a much better. It makes much more sense than Make America Think.
Make America Think as MATH, the acronym, is not an acronym.
It's not an acronym.
Make America Think Harder is an acceptable acronym. I just don't like acronyms as political
I would like
things.
To, yeah. I don't. Yeah.
I still think.
I won't adjust my belief that we should not have Make America Anything acronyms from anybody.
I think it's a little
during
corny
this election.
But I do apologize. I did not intentionally misrepresent your acronym.
I don't like
Cody,
slogans that don't have consent.
When I run for president, my acronym is going to be MAN, Make America Not. we're throwing in the towel.
That sounds like a
throwing
winner.
In the towel.
I might have to reconsider my rule.
Welcome to the worst year ever. We'll get through it together or not. Everything is so dumb, 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 dumb.
Welcome to the worst year ever. We're not going to get through it. Shit. I introduced this bad, but I'm Robert Evans, and I'm joined, as always, by my dear friends, Katie Stoll, Cody Johnston. I'm very strung out. I just got off of 30 hours of flights.
And I think I just cough laughed into the microphone. I apologize. This is off to a wonderful start.
Yeah,
Robert and I are both sick.
Ruined.
Yeah.
Not just six. I think ruined is fair, Katie. Forever.
This really is a terrible year. We are
ruined forever. We're not even there yet.
Not even there yet. Maybe I'll have all of my immune system will be nice and strong by the time we hit 2020. Because this is like the third cold I've had in the last couple months.
You can never I've
been licking the door to a public restroom every day just to build myself up for 2020.
Yeah, I'm not going to get a flu shot, but I am going to rub my face on all public services I find.
I'm feeling great.
This is great. I think we're all, as strung out gross people, ready to talk about Tulsi Gabbard.
You know, I can't imagine a better mindset for talking about a healthy gambit. A better mindset, a better physical...
So I wrote 15 pages about her. This might be a two-parter. We won't know until we get into it.
Well, we'll get through it.
I had a lot to say.
Or not.
Yeah,
Robert had a lot to say about something. Shocking.
This is No, Katie, go on.
No, I'm just letting that 15 pages is still sinking in. My heart sank a bit.
It's
sink into your chair and get ready.
As Cody said before we started, this is basically a Behind the Bastards episode.
Yeah,
cool.
About Tulsi
Gabbard. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that, Robert's been waiting to do an episode of his other show about this. I was like, oh, well. Yeah.
Might as well do it here. I have been asked by so many people about Tulsi, so I am excited to have this out there so everybody can have a listen.
And it was written on a long-haul flight from Korea, so I was pissed off and drunk the entire time.
And you know how many times do you get to say that sentence?
Actually, a lot.
A lot, it turns out.
Now, this has not been a very pro-politician podcast so far, largely because we're all human beings.
Yeah.
But maybe we shouldn't have them at all.
Yeah. Maybe they shouldn't exist as a thing in our society. I think our listeners are pretty clear that the last two candidates we covered, Joseph Robinette Biden and Andrew Yang, are not our preferences.
Sure.
That said, I certainly feel this way, and I think y'all will agree that either man would be an improvement over the current person in office. I don't think Biden's a bad person. I question his competence and fitness, but I don't think he's a bad person. I don't think Andrew Yang is a bad person. I think he's a good guy and pretty smart. I just disagree with some of his policies.
Right.
I think most of the Democrats running right now, basically all of them, are some variation of that for me. I don't like Kamala because I think she did some bad stuff as a prosecutor, but she's a stable human being, and I don't worry that she's going to nuke a country at night.
Right.
I think Buttigieg is a kind of a corporate stooge, but I don't think he's going to put children in cages. I can grudgingly accept a presidency from any of the current candidates, although I wouldn't be excited about most of them, but I could accept most of them as at least an iterative improvement, with the exception of one.
The one that we're going to talk about today?
Yep.
Yeah.
Tulsi, no middle name Gabbard, was born on April 12th, 1981, in Liloaloa, Mauputasi County, American Samoa. She was the fourth of five children between Mike and Carol Gabbard. The family moved to Hawaii when Tulsi was 2 years old, and if you're looking for details from her childhood, you're not going to find much. Her Wikipedia has
She didn't have a childhood.
No, yeah, I mean, she definitely did.
She was born a woman with a gray streak in her hair.
Ooh.
She's not a replicant. We did the Voight-Kampff test on her. And she passed, unlike one of the candidates that I won't name, Klobuchar. Mm-hmm. Her Wikipedia has like no details on her early life, and the articles that you read, there's very few like actual anecdotes about like her as a child. Most of what you'll hear is that she like embraced her Hindu faith as a teenager. And you know, in interviews, like the one detailed piece of New York Magazine I found, she prefers to make vague statements about her personality as a child as opposed to like talking about things that happen. Like with Biden, you get that anecdote about him working as a lifeguard. There's plenty of stories about young Joe Biden, about young Bernie Sanders, about young Elizabeth Warren. It's harder to find that sort of stuff for Tulsi. Right. There's less of it. She tells journalists that she was homeschooled because the schools in Hawaii weren't very good. And she describes her father as an eccentric Catholic. When she talks about her personal faith, she mostly talks about the importance of love and the Aloha spirit, which is obviously fine. She will admit to having been an anxious child. Her sister, Devon, who helps manage Tulsi's presidential campaign and is a U.S. Marshal, spoke for her a lot when they were children. Devon will tell reporters that she had to talk to cashiers and answer the phone for her little sister because Tulsi was too nervous to talk to people. She was very focused on abiding by the rules and not getting in trouble. So,
I relate to that.
Yeah, fine so far. When she tells her own story, Tulsi basically hand waves her way through a youth spent surfing and enjoying her island paradise as a sporty, introverted girl. This is not untrue based on what I've read, but it leaves out a lot of extremely important context. Because, you see, Tulsi Gabbard grew up in a cult, and it's possible that she is still a member to this day.
What?
Yeah, not a lot of people talk.
This is a real revelation.
Yeah. It's going to be a fun episode, y'all.
What's the name of the cult?
I love that 2020 and 2019, 2016, just like sort of our general vibe in the current day is a lot to do with cults.
A lot of
cultic thinking these days.
What is the name of her cult?
I'll get into that in a little bit. Okay. I want to build to it.
Okay.
So most of you have at least probably heard, I'm going to guess all of my co-hosts have heard, of the Hare Krishnas.
Sure,
now,
yeah.
They became famous in the 1970s for having their shaven-headed robed followers standing around at like airports and stuff to mm-hmm. try to convert people. Basically, like you could consider them like Hindu Jehovah's Witnesses in some ways in terms of like the way that they were sort of like standing around books and
a
stuff
lot of
at public areas.
Presenting themselves for outreach and stuff like mm-hmm. that.
Exactly, exactly. Now, the group was founded by a guru named Bhaktivedanta, who basically took ancient Hindu religious texts and translated them into sort of a pop philosophy that white Westerners could easily grasp. His annotated version of the Bhagavad Gita reads like an instruction manual to life. Avoid meat and spicy food, which causes misery by producing mucus in the stomach, etc. You're supposed to chant Krishna's name repeatedly because it brings your soul closer to his divine wisdom. You shave your head bald and you wear robes for some reason. I'm sure there's a justification.
Is Tulsi now, bald?
No. She's not
that?
A Hare.
No.
Yeah, no, she's not. She's not.
Okay.
Now, one of Bhaktivedanta's most ardent followers was a young surfer dude named Chris Butler.
Okay.
Chris lived in Hawaii, where he taught yoga and surfed. His father was a doctor and a communist activist who thought the USSR was basically perfect. As a young man, Chris started reading history and became aware that this was not, in fact, the case. Chris grew instead enamored with Hindu mysticism and very quickly turned his yoga business into a cult. They do translate pretty easily.
Yoga, right? Yeah, meditation, all that kind of stuff. It's like, what if we decided this was a cult now?
It's kind of like how podcasts turn very easily to cults.
Yeah.
And I am excited for us to radicalize our listeners and get them all voting Kaczynski in 2020.
I'm excited to eventually reveal the real lyrics of the theme song. Just wait. Just
Your
wait,
Your instructions
folks.
Are forthcoming.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't play the song backwards either.
Okay.
Yet.
Yeah.
Yet.
Yet.
I'm fascinated. Now, please continue.
Yeah. When Bhaktivedanta visited Hawaii in 1971, Chris folded his small group of followers into the Hare Krishna umbrella in exchange for the title, and I'm going to probably get this one wrong too, Siddhaswarupananda. Siddhaswarupananda.
Okay.
Siddhaswarupananda.
All right.
Doing my best here. This basically marked him out as a favored student of Bhaktivedanta and a leading member of the Hare Krishna faith. Now, the pairing between the two cults was not perfectly peaceful. Bhaktivedanta had to constantly watch Chris, lest he introduce his own even more bizarre ideas into the faith. Chris Butler, for his part, didn't understand why initiates couldn't wear normal clothing or keep their hair. When the guru died in 1977, Chris spun off many of his Hare Krishna followers in Hawaii into his own cult again. He rebranded the mysticism of Bhaktivedanta into a quasi-scientific self-help movement. In 1984, he published Who Are You? Discovering Your Real Identity. Which supposedly used scientific arguments to prove that the soul was eternal. So that's nice.
Was a turtle?
Eternal. No.
Eternal.
No.
Okay.
No. No, again, Katie, you are spoiling our cult.
Right. Come on.
I just got really
Welcome
excited
to the worst
about...
year ever. Our souls will be turtles together.
Mm-hmm. Or not.
Oh, sorry.
Or not.
Just get the now, complete thing.
A 1970 issue of the Honolulu Advertiser described Butler as essentially a dictator, which is not uncommon for cult leaders, seeking complete control over his followers' lives. At that point, he lived with 24 mostly female young adults in a Quonset hut.
Oh, hell yeah.
Now we're getting into this shit. Let's cult this shit up. When interviewed, several of the girls around him said that they would happily kill for him. They also described, yep, that's what you want.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. Mm. They also described several of his teachings. Quote from these random girls in his cult. Flowers scream when they're picked. So do trees when they're trimmed. Chris saw lots of success with his new teachings. In short order, he recorded several TV specials where he'd dress as a young professor-looking dude and sit on a couch, surrounded by students who would ask him questions. I'm going to quote next from a write-up on Tulsi's background in The New Yorker. One of those students was Mike Gabbard. Tulsi's dad, who had been interested in Hinduism since the 1970s. Once he corresponded with Bhaktivedanta, asking for advice on establishing a temple, and Tulsi Gabbard's name reflects the family's pre-existing spiritual commitments. When the Gabbards moved to Hawaii in 1983, they joined the circle of disciples around Butler. Tulsi Gabbard says that she began learning the spiritual principles of Vaishnava Hinduism as a kid, and that she grew up largely among fellow disciples, some of whom would gather on the beach for kirtan, the practice of singing or chanting sacred songs. Gabbard recalls her childhood as lively and freewheeling. She excelled at martial arts and developed a passion for gardening. She was a serious reader, encouraged by her parents, but a number of Butler's former disciples recall a harsher, more authoritarian atmosphere. Defectors tell stories of children discouraged by Butler from attending secular schools, of followers forbidden to speak publicly about the group, of returning travelers quarantined for days, lest they transmit a contagious disease to Butler, of devotees lying prostrate whenever he entered the room, or adding bits of his nail clippings to their food, or eating spoonfuls of sand that he had walked upon. Some former members portray themselves as survivors of an abusive cult. Butler denies these reports, and Gabbard says that she finds them hard to credit. "I've never heard him say anything hateful or say anything mean about anybody," she says of Butler. "I can speak to my own personal experience and, frankly, my gratitude to him for the gift of this wonderful spiritual practice that he has given to me and to so many people."
Wow.
I would posit that his statement about it sounds like what a cult leader would say.
Yeah.
And it does, doesn't it?
And maybe what she says about him sounds like what a cult
member
would say.
So, and that was a recent statement that she made regarding him.
Yes. So, yes, it was.
It does sound like someone that didn't quite leave the cult.
Yeah, we'll continue talking about that. It sure does, Katie, but it's also so much weirder than that.
I can't wait.
But
yeah.
Okay.
So it's possible Tulsi's being totally honest there, and she's never heard him say anything bad. It would not be a totally new thing in history for a charismatic cult leader to have hidden his worst attributes from one of his beautiful young followers. Possible. But there are a lot of accounts of Chris Butler's brutality, many of them by people who say they were present with Tulsi at cult gatherings where they witnessed these things.
Yeah. I bet there New are. York Mag- sounds like cult yeah. stuff. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it sounds like cult stuff. Now, New York Magazine did a great job of digging into this side of things. They talked to, among others, Greg Martin, a former member of the cult who claims he was not allowed to play with other children in the neighborhood. His only social interactions were those Sunday worship sessions where the cult members would all gather on the beach in Kailua. They'd wait for hours for their guru to show up. Tulsi's dad, Mike, would play guitar and lead everyone in hours of chanting. Greg said of Tulsi's father, Mike Gabbard, "You just knew Mike was a dick. He carried himself with dickishness." Obviously, that's just one person.
Sure,
just
sure,
like
sure,
that.
Sure, sure.
Yeah, he carried himself with dickishness. Now, Greg attended numerous worship sessions with Tulsi and her future husband, Abraham, who also grew up in the cult. Tulsi denies she attended any of these worship sessions, for the record, but Greg insists he was there and that she was there too, and the way he describes them is deeply fucked up. Quote, "You're waiting hours and hours for this dude to show up, and then when he does, people go absolutely wild. It's all your family and all your friends singing and dancing and chanting. You're so excited." Chris could be very charismatic, obviously, and like uplifting, but he could also be profoundly abusive. Quote from Greg. "He would start excoriating people for fucking up, sound systems not working, cups of water not being cleaned, people dressed funny, driving poorly. He would publicly mock people, and when he would do that, that's a form of Krishna's mercy."
Okay.
Yeah,
so that's
cult
cool.
Stuff. We
keep... Yeah, yeah, cult stuff. Yeah, yeah. 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 The author of that New York Magazine profile went on to write, "Everyone I spoke to who was raised in the group described as children hearing Butler call men faggots and women cunts. One time in Malibu, Greg recalls, Butler had passed a man on a beach in a thong on his way to the gathering. Butler then described in graphic detail what that man allegedly wanted his boyfriend to do to him." So,
cool.
These are hippies, and Tulsi's parents are described as being hippies, but they are not the free love kind of hippies.
No, this is a dark and seedy type of hippie.
Yeah, love,
not
love
about.
All that.
Yeah. Chris's cult was sexually conservative and wildly homophobic. He taught that public schools were dangerous, which again probably explains why Tulsi was homeschooled. Mm-hmm. The guru himself did not believe in most science. When he traveled, he lined the walls of his homes with tinfoil to block electromagnetic radiation. So,
what?
Cool
oh,
dude.
No.
Oh, no.
Why did you have to do literal tinfoil?
Yeah, that's where this is going. So Chris Butler is not one of those gurus who is capable of being content with a small throng of adoring followers and a pile of money.
You know what? I'll say that I don't know very many cult gurus that are content with just a small following.
You know, Katie, your anti-cult leader agenda has been very clear from the beginning, and I don't think our listeners appreciate it.
I'm sure at least one or two of them do.
This is a pro-cult podcast. Speaking of cults, you know what's not a cult?
What?
The sponsors of the
show. Sponsors of the show, of course. I knew that.
I bet they could be, though, if we wanted them
if
to.
If you... I would actually instead say that if you know people who are involved in cults and you buy them the products advertised on this show, they will instantly find their minds freed. And that is a guarantee.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
A legal binding guarantee. You can sue us if it doesn't come true. Sophie, can we promise that?
No.
The promise has been made.
Well, I did. Yeah, the promise has been made.
It's too bad buy we the can't products cut any of that out.
Send them to Tulsi Gabbard to help her.
Send them to... Yeah. Oh, boy, that could get really uncomfortable depending on who advertises with us eventually, Cody.
But not today.
But not today.
Because we don't
products
know.
Welcome to the worst year ever. We'll get through it together or not.
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene!
Eugene Fodor!
Gene, was booted.
Much of the joy you will find on the road comes from the person you share it with.
So you write the books, Jean, and Vlastar runs the business. I understand now. It is a wise man who marries a wiser woman.
But be careful and choose your travel partner well, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
Get down!
I'm not stupid, Jean. Something is going on, and it's high time you tell me the truth.
Freeze, Americano! Huh? Oh!
Jean! Run!
So travel before it's too late. Your money will return. Your time won't. And we're all too quickly approaching that final destination.
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout. And woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey guys, I'm home.
Everyone knows that it's Dad's job to be a bit of a joker.
Sorry I'm late, everyone. There was an accident at the factory. Monty fell into the upholstery machine. Don't worry though, he's fully recovered.
Good one, Dad.
Did you get the pizza for dinner?
So he likes to keep everyone happy with some dad jokes.
Yep, right here. I had a coupon, and it saved me a lot of dough.
Well, the truth is, Dad is just a fun guy.
Hey, I'm not a mushroom.
Please stop. Where does he get these stupid jokes from?
He listens to the Daily Dad Jokes podcast.
Oh, great. More dad jokes for me.
We've delivered over 15,000 jokes to over 3 million listeners, and man, the postage fees are killing us. Listen to the Daily Dad Jokes podcast every day on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Everything is so dumb, 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 dumb.
We're back.
We're back.
We're back.
We're back.
We're back.
So, as I stated, Chris was not content.
I was trying to get a thing going, but it didn't work.
Oh.
No, it's good. Continue. I want to hear about Tulsi.
Yeah, we're back.
Yeah, yeah. We're back.
Stop.
So,
guys.
Like I said, Chris wasn't happy just having like a pile of followers and cash. And starting in 1976, he started to scheme his way towards political power.
Yeah.
His cult, which he called Science of Identity, formed a political party. Independence for Godly Government. Mm-hmm. They ran candidates in local races without much success. The chair of the party was Bill Pinarosa, the father of Tulsi Gabbard's current chief of staff, Kanoa Pinarosa.
Okay.
Yeah! NY Mag notes that Kanoa had no experience running political campaigns when Tulsi hired him. Butler's wife, Wailana, is a prominent yoga instructor in Hawaii. Abraham, Tulsi's husband, and Tulsi's mother have helped Wailana film her videos. Mm. So... there are a lot of connections, actually, between the
sure
Gabbard campaign and,
still,
members of the cult.
Still,
more than that,
still buds.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, Butler wanted very badly for Science of Identity, both to gain political power, but also to become more legitimate and recognized within mainstream Hinduism.
Okay.
He seems to want very much for his ideas and teachings to influence public policy. Now, Tulsi is very disciplined and tight-lipped about her relationship with the guru and would certainly deny acting as any sort of vessel for him in politics. But when you spell out all of the connections between Butler's people and Tulsi's campaign staff and family, it's hard to not suspect that something might be up. And it's entirely possible that whatever that something is, it's a multi-generational thing.
Right.
Because Tulsi's father, Mike, the Dick, has been politically active for decades. When Tulsi was 14 in the early 1990s, he hosted a radio show called... Let's Talk Straight, Hawaii.
Oh, now, I know what he means by that. All right.
Yeah. He also founded a nonprofit called Stop Promoting Homosexuality America.
Sure.
Really on the
spelling
nose.
Spelling it out there.
Yeah. Really on the nose. Now, on his radio show, Mike Gabbard once noted that he would always hire straight people over queer people. Mm. This caused a public outcry, and the family deli, which was located inside a natural food store owned by Chris Butler's cult, was picketed and went out of business. The radio station pulled Mike's radio show after this, but that did not stop him from continuing to battle tirelessly against the right of random strangers to marry. He became one of the faces of anti-gay marriage activism in Hawaii and tried to build a coalition of Catholics, Protestants, culty weirdos, and Mormons to stop the march of progress. Tulsi's first political actions were following her dad around and knocking on doors with him. She helped in his successful campaign to be elected to the Honolulu City Council and his campaign for the state Senate, both of which were successful. In office, Mike Gabbard pursued a dizzying mishmash of right-wing social policy and left-wing environmental regulation. In 1999, after a character on Dawson's Creek came out as gay, Mike flew to North Carolina to lead a protest on the set of the show.
Are you
so he's
kidding
a cool
me?
Dude. Yeah.
It was his favorite show up till then.
Up till then.
He was heartbroken about it.
Mm-hmm.
In 2000, Tulsi's mother, Carol, won a place on the State Board of Education. It might be fair to say that Chris Butler saw the Gabbard family as the most successful wing of his plan to gain political influence for his cult. Now, as she grew into a young adult, Mike encouraged his daughter to turn her love of the ocean into a political career. Tulsi ran for her first public office. What? We all love the ocean. It's in trouble.
And turning it into a political career.
I'm fine with that part. If all she cared about was the ocean, I wouldn't have an issue with Tulsi Gabbard.
Actually,
we could use a couple of ocean candidates.
It's just that sentence made me laugh.
It's a very funny sentence. Yeah. But yeah, taking literally like, I love the ocean. You should do politics about it.
Right.
All right.
Yeah.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah. Sure. There's some problems relating to politics in the ocean.
Yeah.
Somebody could stand to do more about that.
Yeah, get some more politicians about the ocean.
Yeah, fuck it. Look into it. Now, Tulsi ran for her first public office at age 21, and this is one of the few parts of her backstory that she will go into detail about to reporters. She claims that running for office was one of the major turning points in her life as an anxious, introverted child. Quote from Tulsi, "There was a turning point when I first ran for Congress where I had a realization that this anxiety was coming from a selfish place and thinking about, you know, my own fears and how people are going to respond to me. I don't want to bother people. That felt like it was coming from an inward-looking place, a selfish place, rather than my seeing them as beautiful opportunities to share my aloha. Once I realized that, that changed everything completely."
Okay.
Cool.
Okay.
Good now, to overcome your obstacles.
Good to overcome.
You know?
Absolutely. In 2002, Tulsi became the youngest person ever elected to the Hawaii House of Representatives. Like her father, she supported a wide variety of environmental issues, and socialist issues. But like her father, she was also a socially conservative nationalist. A lot of nationalism mixed in with her socialism. Mm. In 2003, she voted against a bill that would have required hospitals to, quote, provide emergency contraception immediately to rape victims. Her reasoning was that the bill did not include a conscience clause to allow religious doctors to opt out of providing care. In the wake of 9/11, she also supported widespread government surveillance, stating in one speech that the demand for unfettered civil liberties would make America less safe.
Mm.
Cool. Yeah. I hate civil liberties, personally.
Yeah, fuck them.
I didn't, but now I do.
Thank you for growing.
Yeah.
In 2004, Honolulu Magazine emailed Tulsi's father to ask about his ties to that weird Hindu-ish cult thingy.
The cult stuff from before.
The cult stuff from before. Tulsi replied on his behalf and accused the magazine as acting as a conduit for the Honolulu Weekly and other homosexual extremist supporters of Ed Case, her father's opponent. Later that year, she testified against civil unions for gay people, saying it was dishonest, cowardly, and extremely disrespectful to the people of Hawaii to claim that that civil unions were different from same-sex marriage, which is, like, kind of right for the wrong reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was a backdoor way of making gay marriage legal, but having a problem with that is kind of dumb, unless your argument is that, no, we should just push for full marriage.
Right.
Also, 2004 is very recent.
Yeah,
it's not long ago. Yeah. That said, she was against gay marriage at the same time Barack Obama was, so.
I mean, yeah, she's against gay marriage around the same time most politicians still were.
Yeah, so it's one of those things, there's an extent to which you do have to remember where things were at the time.
Yeah.
But also remember all the other things that have been said.
Also all the other things
today
that
about,
I have said.
Yeah. Some radio show stuff, you know, a lot of things.
It just seems like they've come from a very homophobic and vocally so family.
Would be fair. So Tulsi finished one term as a state representative and then shocked everybody by joining the Army National Guard and volunteering for duty in Iraq. She spent 12 months there as a medical specialist at a logistical support base called Anaconda. Now, that base achieved the nickname Mortaritaville due to frequent insurgent mortar attacks. And also the mortaritas, which were delicious.
Yeah, that's I like that.
They only served
name.
Them on Fridays.
I don't like the reason, but clever.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Good nickname. Yeah. Yeah. According to a New York Magazine write-up, quote, every day at 9 a.m., she scrolled through an Excel spreadsheet of casualties. These were American troops for whom she was supposed to organize treatment. That daily task, it left an indelible impression on me, she says. Understanding behind every one of these names is a soldier, sailor, seeing the volume of people paying the price for war. It caused me to think about those who made a decision to start this war. I wondered if they ever thought about these people, their families.
That's good. Like it. That's
cool.
Like
empathy.
I think one of the things about her that draws people to her.
Sure.
Yep.
That sort of outspoken anti-imperialist, regime change war is just like understanding the cost of war and not thinking it's a cost that's worth it.
Now, that's fair, and it's definitely good to have people in politics who were in wars this country waged and understand the human cost,
like
and aren't all rah-rah about it. That said, it's worth noting that whenever she talks about the human cost of war, she talks specifically about its cost on American soldiers and American families, and that is very much her focus, and that will become much more relevant in a little bit.
Okay.
So, by all accounts, a little bit. Now, by every account I've read, Gabbert was a very good soldier. She deployed a second time to the Middle East, to Kuwait this time, as a military police officer, and she left the Army as a major. Once she was clear of the military, her political career took off in earnest. She was elected to the Honolulu City Council in 2011 and introduced a measure to reduce parking restrictions for food truck vendors. Her other major legislative achievement was Bill 54, which allowed city employees to confiscate private possessions left on public property as long as they gave 24 hours notice.
What?
Now that's an odd bill. Yeah.
Okay.
The ACLU protested Bill 54, but Tulsi succeeded in getting it passed. Now, today, interestingly enough, her campaign website frames the bill as part of her commitment to combating homelessness, saying it was, quote, concerned with the cleanliness, public safety, and accessibility of public sidewalks for elderly, children, and the disabled.
Okay, so combating homelessness in the fact that we don't want to see that problem around. It's a detriment to our society. So let's clear it away so that no one sees it. Cool. I hate that.
I should also add that at the time, Gabbard's political opponents opposed Bill 54 because they suspected it was introduced to allow cops in Honolulu to shut down that city's Occupy protest and confiscate tents and other property from activists. Now, interestingly enough, Gabbard brags today that the bill, quote, provided a 24-hour notice before confiscating property stored in the public right-of-way, which kind of makes it sound like the purpose of the bill was to mandate that homeless people had to be warned before their property was confiscated, right. Which is a clever way to reframe the fact that she pushed a bill that allowed the police to take homeless people's property in the first place.
Right, saying that it's introducing a bad idea, but then saying, like, but at least there's a warning, at least we told them.
Yeah. Yeah, and it makes it seem like the bill was to mandate the warning, as opposed to the warning just being part of her letting the cops take their shit.
Right.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah, it's like introducing a bench that, like, has spikes pop out unless you give it money.
Yeah.
But then being like, but, like, we give receipts for the bench.
We are allowing homeless people to pay to not be impaled.
Exactly.
Like, exactly. In May of 2011, I love governments. Mm. In May of 2011, Tulsi Gabbard announced her candidacy for the incumbent Democratic seat on the House of Representatives 42nd District. Despite being seen as the underdog, Gabbard won with 55% of the vote. She immediately set to work pushing for progressive legislation. In 2012, she supported the restoration of the Glass-Steagall Act. She fought against cuts to Medicare or Social Security. She attacked Obamacare for not going far enough and has consistently been an advocate for universal health care. She is anti-nuclear energy, which I personally think is dumb, but is very consistent with most liberal voters in this country.
Yep.
To her credit, by the time she took national office, Tulsi had moved further left on a number of important issues. She now pushed to stop the NSA's bulk collection of data, a significant reversal of her earlier policies on surveillance. She also came around on gay marriage. Now, Tulsi claimed that this was actually due to her experiences in Kuwait, and she wrote this on a blog in 2011. The contrast between our society and those in the Middle East made me realize the difference. The reason those societies are so oppressive is that they are essentially theocracies where the government and government leaders wield the power to both define and then enforce morality. I began to realize that the positions I had held previously regarding the issues of choice and gay marriage were rooted in the same premise held by those in power in the oppressive Middle East regimes I saw. Now,
okay,
it's good that she came around on that issue.
Yeah,
that's one thing I like when politicians are actually honest about their terms.
Evolution.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I used to think this and it was bad, and now
She turned around on what she thought should be allowed, not on what she thought
personally
about gay marriage.
About something.
Yeah.
And she turned around on what she knows is expected of her publicly.
Yes. Right.
Versus what you personally believe is right versus wrong.
Yeah. Now, she also turned around on abortion rights and received an endorsement from Emily's List during her 2012 run. I do want to state that. And taken on the surface, this is all laudable. I think, you know, you have to give people a lot of leniency when they grow up with parents who are crazy extremists. I have a lot of respect for people who can make honest change. But as I kind of hinted at and stated pretty directly, Tulsi didn't actually change her mind at that point about the morality of gay marriage, just about whether or not the government should legislate it. She still thought it was wrong. She just didn't think it should be illegal anymore. That's obviously better than opposing gay marriage. I don't think it's great, but it's better. And there's some evidence that she's moved on since, although a lot of LGBT groups don't really think she's had a mental change about it. I don't know personally. She says the right things now.
Right.
Now, Tulsi's election as the first Hindu American congresswoman and youngest Tulsi was elected as the first Hindu American congresswoman and the youngest congresswoman in history. She was 31 at the time. Her status as a veteran and the fact that she was, you know, pretty hot, made her an instant darling of left-wing politics. And I don't bring that up to be, what's the word?
A man?
Yeah, I bring it up because it's something that comes up constantly in writing about her.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, everyone
people
talks
who write
it,
profiles about her have to talk about it. After her election, Suzanne Malveau told her this on CNN. "I can't tell you how many people have mentioned your name and said, this is one to look out for. Tell us why. I mean, people see you as a rising star. That exact terminology, rising star, was used by the Washington Post and the ABC, too. She was the recipient of a Vogue profile, which described her as having a fit physique and a smile so warm, it's no surprise websites have offered polls rating her hotness.
I hate it.
Awesome.
Yeah. Now, the DNC chose her to be its vice chairman. Nancy Pelosi asked her to speak at President Obama's reelection convention in 2012. And for a while, it looked to many people like Tulsi Gabbard was the bright, shining, and, shall we say, fit future of the Democratic Party. Yeah, because of her smile. Now, that seems great at this point. And she definitely seemed like in 2012, like, oh, shit, maybe in another like 5-10 years, this could be a presidential candidate.
Yeah.
You could see why people would think that. But problems with Ms. Gabbard cropped up rather quickly. Her battles with the Democratic establishment started over her frustration that President Obama refused to use the phrase radical Islamic terrorism when talking about the problems of terrorism around the world. Tulsi's time in the military had given her what some might call a rabid distrust of Islam and Muslims. Her hawkish attitude towards Islamic terrorism earned Tulsi Gabbard regular appearances on Fox News, who gleefully embraced her attacks on the Obama administration. I'm going to quote from a Jacobin write-up here called Tulsi Gabbard is Not Your Friend. Quote, in one interview, she told the host that the vast majority of terrorist attacks conducted around the world for over the last decade have been conducted by groups who are fueled by this radical Islamic ideology, a statement that may be technically true due to the violence and instability plaguing Middle Eastern countries, but is wildly misleading considering that non-Muslims make up the vast, vast majority of terrorist perpetrators in both Europe and the United States. Now, the National Review published a profile of Tulsi in April 2015. It included a quote from the president of a right-wing think tank called the American Enterprise Institute, saying he likes her thinking a lot. Now, the president of the AEI invited her to that organization's closed-door retreat later that year. She, Cory Booker, and John Delaney were the only Democrats to secure invitations. There, she got to hang out with famously fun dudes like Dick Cheney, Bill Kristol, Mike Pence, Rupert Murdoch, and the DeVosses.
Oh, hell yeah.
So that's good. Yeah.
Good company.
Good company. You know what else is good company? What?
And trustworthy?
And trustworthy. The companies that support this show with their advertising petrodollars.
Advertisements. Yes, that is good company.
Yeah, if I were to hear an advertisement from a company of such high reputation, I would snap it right up. But use my money for the whatever it is.
Promo codes and stuff.
Promo codes, money, funding, finances, bank accounts, all good things.
Cults. Wait.
All so good. Mm. Products!
Welcome to the worst year ever. We'll get through it together or not.
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene!
Eugene Fodor!
Gene, we'll boot it!
Much of the joy you will find on the road comes from the person you share it with.
So you write the books, Gene, and last hour on the business. I understand now. It's a wise man who marries a wiser woman.
But be careful and choose your travel partner well, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
Get down!
I'm not stupid, Jean. Something is going on, and it's high time you tell me the truth.
Freeze, Americano!
Jean, run!
So travel before it's too late. Your money will return, your time won't, and we're all too quickly approaching that final destination.
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout, and woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey guys, I'm home.
Everyone knows that it's Dad's job to be a bit of a joker.
Sorry I'm late, everyone. There was an accident at the factory. Monty fell into the upholstery machine. Don't worry, though. He's fully recovered.
Good one, Dad.
Did you get the pizza for dinner?
So he likes to keep everyone happy with some dad jokes.
Yep, right here. I had a coupon, and it saved me a lot of dough.
Well, the truth is, Dad is just a fun guy.
Hey, I'm not a mushroom.
Please stop. Where does he get these stupid jokes from?
He listens to the Daily Dad Jokes podcast.
Oh, great. More dad jokes for me.
We've delivered over 15,000 jokes to over 3 million listeners, and man, the postage fees are killing us. Listen to the Daily Dad Jokes podcast every day on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back.
We're back.
We're talking
we're
about
back.
Tulsi Gabbard, T. Gabs.
T. Gibby Gabs.
Gabby.
Okay. Gabby T's. A little bit of Tulsi T. Oh, T.
And a green Gabbards.
Yeah.
Nope. I was going to be like the kids say T for drama these days, right? That's how it goes.
What? Oh, I don't.
The kids, they're like, I'm going to spill some tea when they.
Oh.
That's
and,
like,
that's,
yeah.
and that's the
yeah.
tea.
Like harsh
Sophie.
Truths.
And Tulsi's a kind of tea.
Turner.
We're spilling some Tulsi tea.
Yeah, let's spill the Tulsi tea.
Is that, Sophie, are the kids listening now?
The kids are definitely listening,
the
Robert.
We've got the kids' attention. Mm-hmm.
So. All right, someone say TikTok and then we'll move on.
TikTok?
All right, nailing it.
Yeah.
Now, Gabbard.
I love all of you.
Gabbard became an outspoken opponent of President Obama's Iran deal. She went on Fox to express her cynicism and agree with Greta Van Susteren that the Iran deal was basically the same thing as Neville Chamberlain's Munich Agreement, which is famously seen as enabling Hitler's rise to power. Or not rise to power, but, you know, rise to being a warlord. I'm going to quote Jacobin again here. Breitbart gleefully quoted her in headlines expressing many and great concerns over the deal as it was being negotiated. On the day the agreement was finalized, she issued a statement saying, "We cannot afford to make the same mistake with Iran that was made with North Korea," citing North Korea's abrogation of the agreed framework agreement it had signed in 1994. When Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu delivered his unprecedented speech to Congress in March 2015 in an attempt to torpedo the deal, Gabbard didn't join the significant number of Democrats who boycotted the speech. See, she attended it. So, bit of a hawk on certain things.
Mm.
Now, afterwards, after attending the speech and taking a hard line on the Iran issue, she received a Champion of Freedom Award from the Jewish Values Gala, an event held by the World Values Network, which is run by a Trump-loving rabbi named Shmuley Botich. At the event, she was photographed with Shmuley and with Sheldon Adelson's wife, Miriam. So that's good. These are good people to be connected
yeah,
to.
Yeah, sure.
That's all I'm saying. Through it all, Tulsi continued to slam the Obama administration for not blaming Muslims for terrorism, saying this failure was why the administration couldn't come up with a way to stop terrorism forever.
Yeah,
we're just not calling it Muslims.
Yeah
that's why it's
not gone forever.
Because she's actually fine with drone strikes and special forces raids and stuff.
Yeah.
It's the not blaming Muslims that's
well,
screwing
that's
us.
That's the whole, like, everyone... Every expert is like, don't call it that because it plays into their narrative. Like,
yeah.
it enhances this, like, macro nationalism mm-hmm. of, like, it's the West versus Islam. And we're in this existential, like, battle now. And it elevates it to that level. And
also, it's, what's the word? Xenophobic, racist, whatever
it's
you want to call it.
Xenophobic, racist.
It's lumping all Muslims as terrorists.
Yeah.
Like, that's end of story.
In a way that actually makes it harder for us to work with forces in the region.
Yes.
Like, speaking as someone who's been shot at by Muslim extremists,
yeah.
The people who were with me at the time, and in some cases putting themselves in between me and my friends in the line of fire, were also Muslims.
Yes.
Like, interesting.
Yeah. Now, through it all, I already said that part.
I have a quick question that maybe you'll get
sure.
to. Is this still,
I love quick questions.
Still her stance? Maybe it's not.
Oh, yes.
Yes, that's, so that hasn't evolved.
No, it has not.
Thank you.
Now, Tulsi told Neil Cavuto that the problem of terrorism around the world was fundamentally about this radical Islamic ideology, which she said needed to be beaten militarily and ideologically. Breitbart soon picked her up as its favorite Democrat.
She's just like saying we need to beat up this religion.
Yes. Yeah, we need to take Islam to the mat.
Oh, Jesus Christ. All right.
Mm-hmm. That's actually way more Hitler-y than... well, I don't know.
There's
who
some Hitler
but...
shades of Hitlerdom. Although Hitler was actually very pro-Islam because he was very anti-Jewish, and there's a lot to say about that. But not in.
I just mean
not relevant. For this.
Beat them militarily and you know, philosophically, whatever the word you used. You know what?
Yes.
For being against the Iran deal because it's similar to the deal with Hitler. It's
She's an interesting character.
Yeah, there's a lot of this going around where, like, you have, like, an opinion or a stance, and it's like, but you know that that's, like, just because you're replacing, like, the Jews with Muslims and, like, these sort of things doesn't mean that the overall point isn't very similar.
Right.
No, it does not.
Okay.
Anyway.
In 2014 and 15, Gabbard pushed for several deeply regressive bills. In 2014, she introduced a bill to halt the visa waiver program for citizens of nations whose people had left to fight with extremist groups. This is one of the things where if you just explain it that way to people, you can get a lot of folks on board with. But if passed, this bill would have forced people from the UK, Germany, France, and basically all of the EU to apply for visas to enter the United States, which is insane. Maybe.
Right.
Now, in 2015, Tulsi supported a bill that would have banned those on the no-fly list from buying guns. And this may sound perfectly reasonable to many liberals who tend to support anything that they see as restricting the number of people who can buy guns. But the implications of introducing gun control in this way are actually very terrifying to me. The no-fly list operates with zero accountability and does not respond to due process. Mm-hmm. And the right to bear arms, whether or not you like it, is part of the Bill of Rights. Legally, it's just as protected as your right to free speech. And allowing the government to take away one of a human being's fundamental rights via a system with no due process is a very bad precedent. Right. It's scary when you think of the actual implications. Again, these are all things that you can get a lot of liberals on board with when they don't think through the implications. It's like, oh, yeah, stop people from, you know, require visas for people to come here from countries that, you know, their people have joined extremist groups. It's like, okay, but you mean the UK shouldn't be able to come here without a visa? You mean Canadians should require a visa to enter our country?
Yeah, that's wild. And I don't know much about the no-fly list, but I don't. Trust that everybody that gets put there is
It's bad. And like it speaks to like her being supportive of that of the surveillance state early on.
Yes.
And stuff even like with gun control, like people are always really on board with like whenever anyone mentions mentally ill people, it's a problem. You take their guns away. When again, you're not really thinking that through and what that means and who is categorized as what and
And if you do think it through, there are questions that come up like, can anyone name a single person who has carried out a mass shooting in this country and was on the no-fly list?
Oh, I certainly can't.
Yeah, exactly. Now, in 2015, Tulsi introduced a resolution that called for the U.S. to prioritize religious and ethnic minorities when granting refugee status, basically prizing Yazidis and Christians above Muslims when it came to declaring people refugees. Now, it's interesting to me that so many people on the left support her for her supposed anti-war stance, because if you really dig into her, it's clear that she holds basically the same views on unrestricted drone warfare as every other neoliberal politician, as well as a lot of the same views on how to treat Muslims as many right-wing politicians. Here's Jacobin again discussing Gabbard's responses in an interview with the website Truthout. Responding to a question about drones, Gabbard said that there is a place for the use of this technology, as well as smaller quick-strike special force teams versus tens, if not hundreds of thousands of soldiers occupying space within a country. Now, she's repeated this point again and again. Responding to questions from Honolulu Civil Beat in 2012, Gabbard said, "The best way to defeat the terrorists is through strategically placed small quick-strike special forces and drones, the strategy that took out Osama bin Laden." She told Fox in 2014 that she would direct the great military that we have to conduct unconventional strategic precise operations to take out these terrorists wherever they are. Mm-hmm. The same year, she told Civil Beat that military strategy must put the safety of Americans above all else and utilize our highly skilled special forces work with and support trusted foreign partners to seek and destroy this threat. It was Quick Strike Special Forces conducting a strategic precise operation, Jacobin notes, that a little less than 4 months ago killed 30 civilians in a botched raid in Yemen. You might also notice that 8 years of these policies under Obama didn't stop ISIS from happening.
Sure, I had noticed that.
Yeah.
A lot of these operations seem to increase the number of people who lean towards terrorist organizations.
Sure. You think that a lot of these drone strikes kind of radicalize people, like pull them into
maybe
hating
yeah.
Well, if my wedding got bombed, I would be like, thank you for the help.
Oh, no, I think you'd be, yeah, exactly. Who doesn't want their
you'd
wedding
be like,
to be bombed?
Woo, dodge that bullet.
It's just,
I was at a wedding
that was a
just
terrible
the other
joke,
week,
and I'm sorry.
And
I apologize.
The groom was like, this is a special day, and it's really magical, but what if there were a thermobaric missile hitting my mom? Mm-hmm. That would make it even better.
Even better.
You're like, oh, they were going for the terrorists, and they missed, but thanks for trying. So weird that she is like... you don't get the sense that she's actually anti-war. She's just anti-American soldiers dying, which I understand that aspect of it. But what about the rest of it?
Yeah, generally anti-regular people dying.
Yeah, right.
And that includes American soldiers. But like, it's this thing. She frames herself as being like this radical anti-war candidate. But you're just saying the same. Like, you're saying a mix of the same shit Obama did for 8 years with very mixed at best success, and a lot of the shit people on the right have been saying for years with no success. And it's like, that's not different.
Yeah, right.
It's frustrating to me. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it just seems like she would support various wars as long as we could just do exclusively drone strike
do it
stuff
from here.
Right.
Yeah.
And like, special forces raids.
Yeah. And special forces raids, of course.
Yeah. Now, in spite of all this, or perhaps because of it, Tulsi Gabbard's popularity among leftists continued to grow right up until the 2016 election. She was an enthusiastic backer of Bernie Sanders, and he seems to genuinely like her as a person and a candidate. Tulsi attacked the DNC for its treatment of Sanders during the election, which is very fair, and gave Hillary Clinton just about the most tepid endorsement imaginable in August of 2016.
It's also pretty
given
fair.
The remaining Yeah. I'm not slamming her on this. Given the remaining choices, like Bernie Sanders, I will be casting my vote for Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
Which is basically what I say whenever I have to eat at Jimmy John's.
Right.
giving the remaining choices like Bernie Sanders, I guess I'll eat at Jimmy John's.
Yeah, I will have bread and cheese and a meat.
Yeah.
Put them together and I'll eat it.
The alternative is a Sizzler, so yes.
Yeah. I don't know. Sizzler's got some shrimps.
Yeah, the roadside Sizzler shrimp is not
the
one to pick.
The
yeah, this is going to be what ends this podcast.
Jeez. I don't know if we can ever recover from
this. We will not get through this together. Not after that Sizzler comment.
We're
going to
get picketed like Tulsi Gabbard's family deli after her dad attacked gay people on the air.
Ooh.
Nice callback. Thank
that
you.
That is a thing that happened.
Now, of course, Hillary Clinton did not become the president. And oddly enough, this turn of events worked out very well for Tulsi's career, at least for a while. Shortly after Trump's inauguration, Steve Bannon set up a meeting between Tulsi and the new president.
Hell yeah.
Sources at the time told The Hill that Bannon loves her and wants to work with her on everything. He saw her as a possible ambassadorial pick or perhaps a good pick for the cabinet, saying she gets the foreign policy stuff, the Islamic terrorism stuff.
Yeah, she does. Now, yeah, he does.
And this is distinctly untrue. See, Tulsi Gabbard's beliefs on how to fight terrorism are, at their very best, incoherent. She has repeatedly railed against the idea that improving living conditions in parts of the world that host terrorist groups could do anything to reduce the recruitment of those groups.
Wait, she said that that's not a viable option? Or that doesn't work? What?
Yes.
It's like the most basic thing you can do.
Yeah,
stop violence and crime. What the fuck?
Yeah, she is not supportive of that.
All right.
And again, that Jacobin write-up does a really good job of picking this apart. In February 2015, Gabbard had the chance to question the director of Defense Intelligence Agency, Vincent Stewart. She asked him about the debate over how this ideology, how this motivation must be identified and what common elements existed among different Islamic terrorist groups, including ISIS, Al-Qaeda, and Boko Haram. She then went on Fox and reported that Stewart had identified very clearly that it is this radical Islamic theology that is fueling these groups. But Gabbard had heavily distorted what Stewart actually said. While he did call ISIS a radical ideology that must be countered with a moderate ideology, ideology. He also pointed out that the common elements that had produced such groups were ungoverned states, weak government institutions, economic instability, and poverty. When Secretary of State John Kerry spoke at Davos and said that some terrorists were lured into extremist groups by the promise of regular meals, a paycheck, Gabbard attacked him on CNN. She said he completely missed the point, calling it a huge mistake to think, quote, that somehow, okay, well, look, if we give them $10,000 and give them a nice place to live, that somehow they're not going to be engaged in this fighting.
Now, that's so frustrating.
This ignores a lot, including the fact that extremist groups like Hamas and ISIS explicitly use the promise of wealth to draw in young recruits. Right. You only need to read a couple issues of Dabiq from around the height of the Islamic State to see that ISIS sought to draw in poor young men by promising them that they'd be able to live like nobility and get mansions and cars and money. Likewise, Hezbollah in Lebanon owes at least some of its power to the fact that it provides schools and hospitals to people whose government often fails to provide them with basic services. But Tulsi doesn't think helping people is the way to reduce extremism. What does she think will work? Well, she hasn't been consistent about that. In one speech, she stated the problem had to be confronted ideologically by spreading a consciousness of love. Her actual actions, though, suggests that she prefers a somewhat less hippy-dippy tactic, supporting violent dictators over their people when those people are Muslims.
It's like... like... Marianne Williamson's approach, but like not, but I don't know. That's just,
I mean, nothing
weird...
like Marianne Williamson. Well, the idea like... of this, that's just something that she grew up with from her culty past. That is a talking point that can be said, like, yeah, we come at this with love. But the practicality is that she's supports drone strikes and taking out Muslims.
Just like the like, oh, we're going to solve this with the idea of love, but not actually materially improve anyone's life.
Like, what does that mean? Like,
and add love to their life. We're just going to be like, you're hey, good going.
Because, like, what are you going to be? Like a missionary?
It's thoughts and prayers. Your, like,
and there's like
beach love thing. Yeah, anyway.
Yeah, it's frustrating because if you look at some of the stuff that actually helps, like one thing that is tried in a number of places is like there's some really heroic people who have started like after school soccer programs and stuff in very poor parts of the Middle East because it's like, look, if these kids need something to fucking do, that's part of what makes them so recruitable is there's fucking nothing. There's no money. There's no opportunity. If you give them fucking something, it makes them less likely to be drawn in by these ideologies. So let's try. And like that is an example of somebody.
I mean, that's
confronting the problem with love, but also with time and with providing something to these people.
When I was in Ireland and in Northern Ireland, you know, when they were talking about before the end of the Troubles, like that was a thing. Like you had to like give the youth soccer games, things that they can go invest in and like maybe get to know people that they don't necessarily agree with.
It's healthy. And I mean, that's why
an outlet for your energy.
That's why football was invented.
Well, yeah, I talked with, back when we were working at Cracked, I did a series of articles with a former IRA terrorist who got jailed for mailing bombs to dozens of people. And when you talk about what de-radicalized him, a good reason to get jailed. And when he was in jail, he was visited by a Protestant priest and a British member of parliament who de-radicalized him just by sitting down and treating him like a human and talking to him for months. Yeah. And it was like, that was what pulled me out of it, was these people meeting me as human beings and like wanting to know what had gone wrong in my life and shit.
Yeah, it's restorative justice.
Yes.
For the most part, we paint things, if we don't have access to it in our daily life, you start to get a general picture of what it is instead, and you lose the humanity of who people are. Anyway,
so all of this is to say, love can absolutely confront terrorism, but it has to be paired with things besides drone strikes.
And dictators,
the love of a good drone.
Now, I mean, look, I fucked a lot of predators, and
what?
Yeah, of the drones, easily the second or third sexiest.
Oh, okay, I see.
Yeah. Good drone.
I
really
have no context for that, but I sure I agree with you.
Yeah, I'll hook you up with the drone dating app that I use.
Hell
damn it! I should have had a good name for a drone based dating app.
Whoosh, well, boom.
Now I'm all
whoosh,
horny.
Whoosh is it?
Focus. Whoosh, boom, bang.
Oh, download whoosh.
Whoosh, boom, bang.
Yeah. Oh, I got a boom. You match with booms.
Okay. More about Tulsi, please.
Yeah. In 2014, Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi visited the United States. Tulsi Gabbard greeted him warmly and gifted him with her own personal copy of the Bhagavad Gita. Modi gave her a beautiful message of Krishna for her wedding, and Tulsi gave him a CD of music from her wedding in response. Mr. Modi invited her to India. Congresswoman Gabbard visited and had a friendly meeting with the RSS, a right-wing Hindu fascist paramilitary organization that Modi supports. The group views India as a fundamentally Hindu nation where citizens of other religions should not hold the same rights.
Cool.
Now, that's all pretty fucked up, but the whole situation is much darker than that. Narendra Modi is not just a far-right politician with a paramilitary group at his beck and call. He's a mass murderer. I'm going to quote now from a write-up in Haaretz. In 2002, Modi was the chief minister of the Indian state of Gujarat, G-U-J-A-R-A-T. I always fuck up pronouncing it, when fire broke out in a train full of Hindu pilgrims. This is how The Guardian's Aditya Chakraborty describes what followed. Within hours and without a shred of evidence, Modi declared that the Pakistani secret services had been to blame. He then had the charred bodies paraded in the main city of Ahmedabad and let his own party support a statewide strike for 3 days. What followed was mass bloodshed, 1,000 dead on official estimates, more than 2,000 by independent tallies. The vast majority of those who died were Muslim. Mobs of men dragged women and young girls out of their homes and raped them. One of the ringleaders boasted of how he slit open the womb of a pregnant woman.
My God. There were
clear signs that the attackers benefited from state-level support. The attackers, armed with swords, machetes, or iron bars, carried computer printouts listing the addresses of Muslim families, shops, and businesses, according to a report in The Telegraph. Across the province, 180 mosques were destroyed or damaged, along with thousands of Muslim-owned businesses and homes. Callers to police stations were told, "We don't have orders to save you, and we cannot help you. We have orders from above."
That's making me a little emotional. What year was this?
2002.
Yeah. Wow.
When the massacre is brought up to Tulsi Gabbard, she tends to say things like, "There was a lot of misinformation that surrounded the event in 2002. The event is a fun way to refer to thousands of people being murdered and raped. Yeah. In 2015, Tulsi Gabbard opposed House Resolution 417, praising India's rich religious diversity and commitment to tolerance and equality, and reaffirming the need to protect the rights and freedoms of religious minorities. The bill was seen as a critique of Modi's anti-Muslim policies. Now, it would be too much for me to say that there was definitely quid pro quo here, but in 2016, the Indian government announced the winners of the Padma Awards, which are very prestigious within the Hindu faith. Only two non-Indians received awards. One of them was Wailana, Chris Butler's wife. You know, the yoga teacher who's worked with Tulsi Gabbard's husband and mom.
I was waiting for it. I know how
you
do things.
I knew we were
things.
Coming back around. Yeah. That is wild.
Oh, yeah, baby. Oh, yeah.
That's tasty.
What?
I mean, I shouldn't laugh like that after talking about what was essentially the Muslim equivalent of Kristallnacht.
Yeah, that was a terrible story, but you got the release valve ready.
Bam!
Yeah.
Put some Nas in that tank. Yeah. Woo.
Speaking of
genocide?
No.
Oh. Ethnic cleansing?
No. Something else.
Corruption at the highest levels of power?
Ooh. Getting farther away or closer?
Speaking of defending dictators,
no.
You know who doesn't?
These ads and products and services.
I hope they don't.
I certainly hope they don't either. I hope they enjoy us mentioning dictators in our throw to their ads.
I just learned that our primary sponsor is the app Dictator, which is the word dictator without the O at the end,
which
is a dating app for dictators. Mm-hmm. So we should probably re-record this.
But we're not going to.
Nope.
And if you've not downloaded it, you probably don't need to.
Yeah, but if you want to fuck Rodrigo Duterte, it's the only app for that.
Welcome to the worst year ever. We'll get through it together or not.
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene!
Eugene Fodor!
Gene, we'll boot it!
Much of the joy you will find on the road comes from the person you share it with.
So you write the books, Jin, and Vlastar runs the business. I understand now. It is a wise man who marries a wiser woman.
But be careful and choose your travel partner well, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
Get down!
I'm not stupid, Jean. Something is going on, and it's high time you tell me the truth.
Freeze, Americano! Huh?
Jean, run!
So travel before it's too late. Your money will return, your time won't, and we're all too quickly approaching that final destination.
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout, and woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey guys, I'm home.
Everyone knows that it's Dad's job to be a bit of a joker.
Sorry I'm late, everyone. There was an accident at the factory. Monty fell into the upholstery machine. Don't worry though, he's fully recovered.
Good one, Dad.
Did you get the pizza for dinner?
So he likes to keep everyone happy with some dad jokes.
Yep, right here. I had a coupon, and it saved me a lot of dough.
Well, the truth is, Dad is just a fun guy.
Hey, I'm not a mushroom.
Please stop. Where does he get these stupid jokes from?
He listens to the Daily Dad Jokes podcast.
Oh, great. More dad jokes for me.
We've delivered over 15,000 jokes to over 3 million listeners, and man, the postage fees are killing us. Listen to the Daily Dad Jokes podcast every day on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Everything is so dumb, 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 dumb.
We're back.
We sure
We're
are.
Talking about Tulsi Gabbard's.
Still
Tulsi.
Are.
Yep.
The old now, Tabby.
The old Tab Gabs. In her defense, she does not just support dictators who offer her guru the religious legitimacy that he's sought for decades. She's just generally a big fan of brutal strongmen ruling in parts of the world with large Muslim populations. Over the last few years, Tulsi has cultivated a surprising support of the Syrian regime of Bashar al-Assad. In January 2017, Tulsi Gabbard received an invitation from Bassem Quamem, a former executive director of the Arab American Community Center for Economic Services, or ACCESS. The group wanted to pay for her to fly to regime-controlled Syria. Gabbard accepted and went on a fact-finding mission, which just so happened to include a surprise meeting with Bashar al-Assad. When she was critiqued for meeting with a dictator who'd murdered 500,000 people, Tulsi defended herself by saying she felt it was important to take the meeting. "I think we should be ready to meet with anyone if there's a chance it could bring about an end to this war, which is causing the Syrian people so much suffering." I wonder who's causing most of that suffering.
Yeah, it's a good question.
Just the war. Just vaguely the war.
Yeah. This
Not
conflict has
an
to
individual.
End.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
There are fine people on both sides. No, she's not
yes.
saying that.
There's fine people. Yeah. It's frustrating. Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah. I don't know what she intended to do on this trip to find facts. I think generally, isn't meeting with people to stop bloodshed is good, even if those people are monsters. But
if you're doing
if that's what
well,
you're
right,
doing.
Exactly. That's what
yeah.
I'm getting at. It's like, well,
maybe I should go forward a little
yeah.
bit.
Yeah, please give us more information.
Now, there are a couple of things that are sketchy here. One is that Quam, the guy who invited her, has some very shady ties to a group called the Syrian Social Nationalist Party.
Okay. Unbelievable.
You reverse it and it's fine. You reverse it and it's fine.
Yeah. Just put it in a different order. Why don't they just call themselves not Syrians? It's right there. Come on.
Damn it. That is really good. Now, the Syrian Social Nationalist mm-hmm. Party is a secular pro-Assad political party in Syria. As you can probably guess from the name, they're fascists. But since they're secular and support brutally cracking down on Islamic movements, Tulsi's more or less fine with them. She has called Assad a brutal dictator, but has also written that every Syrian soldier we and our Saudi partners kill is one less soldier available to fight against ISIS. Yes, the real killers in Syria. Now, not that like fuck ISIS, obviously, but really missing some key details of this conflict. Sure. Now, Tulsi has also dabbled more than a skosh in war crimes denial. She's refused to name Bashar al-Assad as a war criminal in interviews or as an enemy of the United States. And she also used her 2020 campaign website to push conspiracy theories. In a section of the site titled Reports on Chemical Attacks in Syria, she states, "There is evidence that both the Syrian government of Bashar al-Assad as well as the armed opposition groups aligned against him have used chemical weapons during the civil war. However, I remain skeptical about two particular chemical weapons attacks, one at Khan Sheikhoun on April 4th, 2017, and the other at Douma on April 7th, 2018. Both attacks occurred in towns under the control of al-Qaeda-linked opposition forces. Both attacks resulted in multiple civilian casualties, and both were immediately blamed on the Assad government. However, there is evidence to suggest that the attacks may have been staged by opposition forces for the purpose of drawing the United States and the West deeper into the war."
Okay.
Now, Tulsi's skepticism here is based entirely on the work of Dr. Theodore Postol, a professor emeritus at MIT. He is a regular guest on Russia Today, who usually bills him as the MIT professor who doesn't believe Bashar al-Assad gassed his own people. Postol has met with Tulsi Gabbard to talk about the Khan Sheikhoun and Douma attacks, and if you aren't well-read on the issue, his arguments can make a lot of sense, but they are horseshit. And I'm going to quote now from an article written in Bellingcat by a guy who is admittedly sort of my boss, Elliot Higgins. Quote, "Postol is a controversial figure with regards to the use of chemical weapons in Syria. He first came to prominence with regards to the topic following the August 21st, 2013 sarin attacks in Damascus, where he published a series of claims suggesting the attacks had been staged. He became particularly notorious when, due to his own lack of expertise in chemistry, he approached the conspiracy theorist YouTuber Maram Susli, known as Mimi al-Laham, Partisan Girl, Syrian Girl, or Syrian Sister, for advice on chemical weapon manufacturing. Despite only being a chemistry student, Postol chose this Australian YouTuber, who, as he stated in a 2014 interview with the conspiracy theorist Ryan Dawson, I knew to be a chemist because I was watching her on Twitter. I could see from her voice, I didn't know her and still don't know her, that she was a trained chemist, to be his only expert when it came to the chemistry of the sarin used in the August 21st, 2013 chemical attack, in particular to attack the work of chemical weapons specialist Dan Cazetta regarding the use of hexamine in the Syrian government's sarin recipe." Writing for Bellingcat, Cheryl Rofer, a chemical weapons specialist with decades of experience in the field, stated the following about Postol's analysis on the advice of Susli. "Postol is operating from a naive set of assumptions based on limited experience in a first-year chemistry laboratory, presumably the experience of his informant. The result is a wrong-headed approach to the problem and nonsensical demands of Cazetta. Nothing in Postol's argument sounds like it was written by a chemist or someone with a working knowledge of chemistry."
Mm. Okay, then.
So, this is Gabbard's source.
Yeah.
There's a lot more in the article, and I recommend reading that article, Tulsi Gabbard's Reports on Chemical Attacks in Syria, a self-contradictory, error-filled mess. The whole issue of Syrian war crimes denial is too complex and nuanced to delve into in more detail in this episode. What's important to understand in the context of Tulsi Gabbard is that this is part of a pattern of her apologizing for dictators.
Right.
And we are not at the end of that pattern yet. You want to guess who's next?
No.
It's Trump's favorite dictator. It's the guy Trump named.
No.
This is the guy that Trump literally named his favorite dictator.
I can't think of his name right now.
Yeah, like I'm not joking or like.
No.
Like he literally said my favorite dictator.
My favorite dictator.
Yeah.
Erdogan, did he say that about?
No.
Did he say that about?
No. Abdel Fattah el-Sisi.
That's right.
He compliments everybody so much. It's hard to keep track of how he compliments them.
In November 2015, Tulsi Gabbard traveled to Egypt as part of a congressional delegation and met Egypt's dictator, Abdel Fattah el-Sisi. The meeting itself was not a scandal. Sisi is Egypt's leader, and congresspeople going to meet with him is not an abnormal thing. What's weird is how praiseful Gabbard chose to be about a man who has jailed 60,000 of his own people for political dissent and murdered hundreds more. Gabbard said, President el-Sisi has shown great courage and leadership in taking on this extreme Islamist ideology, while also fighting against ISIS militarily to keep them from gaining a foothold in Egypt. She urged her fellow elected leaders to recognize Sisi for his leadership and stand with him in this fight against Islamic extremists.
Law and order. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Great. Great stuff, Tulsi.
Strong leadership.
I like that.
Jail them all.
It's really terrifying.
Yeah, that's a lot of dictators to be this praiseful.
It sure is. And just coming back around again to this Islamic extremists and, you know, othering of Muslims.
That's the big threat in the world.
The big threat.
Nothing else. Yeah. Oof. Now, of course, Tulsi Gabbard is running for president. She has announced that she will not seek re-election to Congress. Supposedly, this is so that she can focus entirely on becoming president. The reality seems to be that she was almost certainly going to get her ass handed to her by her left-wing rival in her re-election campaign. Mm. Nationwide, Tulsi has consistently hung in at around 1% to 2% of the vote. Her main marketing focus has been to bill herself as an anti-war, anti-intervention candidate. But she is not anti-war. She is anti-U.S. soldiers dying in wars. Her history has shown that she doesn't really care how many non-Americans die or live under tyranny as long as American boys and girls don't wind up in firefights. That's certainly a stance you can take if you want, but it's not one I find particularly admirable. Right. It has, however, earned her a dedicated base of supporters, including Joe Rogan, who had her on his popular podcast and said, Tulsi Gabbard is my girl. I'm voting for her. I decided. I like her. I met her in person. Fuck it. Now, her base of support is certainly one of the more confusing ones in modern American politics, and I found a really fun summary of a bunch of her followers at a rally in an Atlantic article. Quote, Gabbard's supporters are a mix of old hippie peaceniks, cryptocurrency enthusiasts, people who obsess over American imperialism, and former Trump voters. They are also people who just love that she's a young woman of color who always talks about what we in Hawaii call that spirit of aloha, as she said at the Wing Ding. Aloha means so much more than hello and goodbye, as some of you may be familiar. What it really means is love and respect and a recognition that we are all connected and that we are all children of God. We are all brothers and sisters, regardless of the color of our skin or where we come from or who we love or how we worship or if we worship. At a recent event in Los Angeles,
a woman.
You might question that a little. At a recent event in Los Angeles, a woman told Gabbard she had cancer and attributed it to a wire on her roof. I'm now electrosensitive, the woman said. She told Gabbard that she lived in her car and wanted to know what the candidate would do about Federal Communication Commission standards. This is something I'm looking more into as I'm hearing from people like you who are raising these concerns, Gabbard replied. A 16-year-old of the event told
Gabbard. She said that.
Yeah.
I'm sure someone else didn't say that.
A 16-year-old at the event told Gabbard he is frustrated that no one seems to care about the concerns of young people. I'm smiling, she told him, because I've lost track of how many times I've been told that. Now, Gabbard has also attracted quite a bit of support from literal Nazis, including David Duke, Richard Spencer, and the Daily Stormer, who ran a campaign to drum up the additional donors she needed to make the 65,000-person threshold to qualify for the most recent round of debates. They told their readers that doing this would, quote, make the Jews go nuts, because Gabbard's an anti-war candidate and they think Jewish people are pro-war. Now, I could go into this in more detail, but I won't, because to her credit, Tulsi has been vehement about rejecting these people's endorsement. In November 2016, David Duke suggested she be made Secretary of State. Tulsi Gabbard immediately tweeted back to him, you didn't know I'm Polynesian/Caucasian? Dad couldn't use whites-only water fountain. No thanks, your white nationalism is pure evil. So she has been very consistent in rejecting these fuckheads, and I'm not going to hit her anymore on that issue.
Yeah.
Nor do I think she's a Russian asset, recently become a... She's not a willful asset of the Russian government. She's not a Manchurian candidate.
And that's
not working with Putin.
That was what was so frustrating about that whole thing, is that it implied that she was knowingly colluding with Russia, which is nonsense.
It's a dumb stance to take.
Maybe on, like, if you're going to say that, show us some proof. Otherwise, you're just defaming somebody.
Right. Anyone that sort of disrupts the status quo or, like, causes issues is seen by a certain group of people as being a Russian asset, which makes sense, I think, in their mind, because, like, that's the goal, is to sort of destabilize things. But, like, the idea
I don't know
is...
that anybody that's like that is seen that way, but...
Yeah. She's not a secret agent or some shit like that.
They might like her. They might...
They definitely like her.
They absolutely, we know that they've given a lot of...
Undeniably like her.
A lot
There's
of people
evidence of that.
That are, you know... Putin supporters or work with RT have given her a lot of money.
Exactly.
But I just mean, like she's probably a very attractive candidate for them. But it's different than being someone's person.
It's the same thing. It's the same thing with her the support she's gets from literal Nazis, where it's like, that doesn't mean she's working with them. We can look at, wow, all of these terrible people really like her. That should concern us without saying, oh, she's a sleeper Nazi or something
Look
like
at
that.
Why and like what are the similarities there that might might give you pause, not just like, oh, yeah, she's going to all these Putin Nazi meetings.
Like Russia Today has been very consistent about promoting clips from Gabbard's speeches where she urges the U.S. to avoid foreign intervention. And there's significant evidence that Russian botnets have worked to help spread the popularity of her campaign. Which is not because Russia is anti-intervention. Russia intervenes all over the goddamn place with soldiers and weapons, and they're very happy to do so in a number of countries. They just don't want the U.S. there because it's competition. So they're fine with Gabbard for that reason, and they want to support her campaign. That said, I still think the shadiest thing about Congresswoman Gabbard is her relationship with cult leader Chris Butler. She has been extremely disciplined about avoiding any direct mentions of Butler or admitting ongoing involvement with the cult. It is entirely possible that she has no continuing relationship with Butler and just decided to have a campaign almost entirely staffed by his people for some weird, unrelated reason. I tend to have a conspiratorial view on this issue myself, due in large part to a New Yorker article titled, "What Does Tulsi Gabbard Believe?" Quote, "She has resisted telling the story of her spiritual journey. This summer, when I asked her about the teacher who led her to Hinduism, Gabbard grew evasive. I've had many different spiritual teachers and continue to," she said. "There's not one that's more important than the others?" "No," she said. Now, when pressed, she did admit that Chris Butler was one influence on her, but denied that he was a particularly prominent one. Now, the author of that New Yorker article actually interviewed Chris Butler, too. And while he was as well disciplined enough to avoid saying anything damning, fuck if it isn't tempting to read between the lines of these next few paragraphs I'm going to quote. Butler recognizes the usefulness of a concise, recognizable label, especially in politics, and so he suggested to Gabbard a compromise. I told her, why don't you use the phrase transcendental Hinduism? Indeed, during a recent conversation in the congressional dining room, Gabbard did precisely that. Gabbard and Butler both say that the foundation is a resource, not a religious organization. There is no official hierarchy, and therefore no system of accountability besides Butler's own conscience and the conscience of those who are devoted to him. In one lecture, he acknowledged the potential for skepticism, offering followers his version of Pascal's wager. If I'm not the representative of God and you dovetail your will with mine, then your life is destroyed, he said. And if I am the representative of God and you don't dovetail your will with mine, then your life is wasted. And yet, he allows that he does have disciples who call him Jagad Guru, or teacher of the world. What the Jagad Guru title conveys is that what is being taught is not just for a certain group of people, Butler says. It is something that everybody can appreciate, and it's for people all over the world. A guru, Butler once explained, is supposed to be a bona fide representative of the Supreme Lord. Not coincidentally, Butler speaks lovingly of Gabbard, whom he's known virtually all her life. As a girl, he remembers, she had a real gravity and seriousness that was beyond her years. Nowadays, Butler regards Gabbard with fatherly pride, likening himself to a music teacher watching a star pupil excel. He's taught one of his students cello, he says, and he sees that, oh, this student of mine is now playing cello in the Philharmonic Orchestra. And that's beautiful.
Okay. Mm. Certainly sounds like they continue to have a relationship.
Certainly does. And certainly sounds like something weird's going on.
Even if she's not
going
to call herself a disciple, he's got a
Hinduism.
Huge amount of influence on her life and her campaign.
Certainly sounds fucked up. That's Tulsi Gabbard. Friend to dictators, Islamophobe, occasional progressive, and possible sleeper candidate for a surfer bro Hindu cult leader.
Aloha, Tulsi.
Yeah. 2020 is going to be a fucking ride.
Oh,
I don't know why you say aloha. I say aloha. And goodbye. Wow, that was really, really interesting. I learned so much about her.
Yeah.
I can't wait to start telling it to people when they ask me why I don't like Tulsi.
Right.
I'll have even more ammunition.
Mm-hmm. Well, because like, and then what's after she doesn't get the nomination? You know,
yeah. What
like,
is
that's,
it?
Because there's a 2020 where it's terrible for everybody, no matter what.
She's been very consistent about saying she would only run as a Democrat.
Yeah.
So at least at this point, she's saying she definitely would not.
Yeah, she's gone on Tucker Carlson's show to make it clear that she's not going to run as independent.
Yeah. So I don't know what's going to happen.
You know, you can trust politicians when they say something.
That's the thing everyone says about politicians.
Yeah.
There's one thing we know about them. Yeah. They're trustworthy.
I love being asked about the radio waves burning your brain, and her answer being, oh yeah, we're very much looking into it.
We're definitely looking into whether or not those radio waves are burning your brain.
Liar.
Yeah, I got my people looking into it right now. We're very much bigly, greatly looking at it.
In fairness, I'm not sure how you handle that question.
If
Joe Biden gets that question, like, what do you say? Like, I'm sorry, you're crazy.
Right.
That's not the right response.
No,
I don't know what the good response
true.
Is.
Yeah. It's just the similarity of, like, we're very much looking into it. It's like, wow, that's...
That is a take. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
Well, thanks, Robert.
So,
thanks for that.
You guys find this surprising? Interesting?
Very interesting.
Edifying?
Not surprising.
Yeah, some of it...
well, actually,
surprising.
The cold stuff is very surprising, actually.
Yeah.
That is truly a wild story.
Do you want to go to Hawaii and try to join the cult?
I do. I mean, I love Hawaii.
Yeah.
I just got back from Hawaii. Mm.
Welcome to the worst year ever. We'll join a Hindu transcendentalist cult together and stop gay people from getting married. Everything is so dumb.
Just went right over that or not part.
Yeah, no. We're doing it.
Oh, no. Yeah, we are for sure.
Has her father's opinions on gay marriage and her family's opinions evolved?
I don't think so in the case of her dad, but I really don't. You know, there was only so much time to look into stuff. So
I mean,
was
it all those campaigns and that radio show. I can't
it's
imagine
hard to believe that he...
That's a hard transition to make.
But I'm sure she's asked him to tone it down.
Right.
I don't think anyone in the family's actively fighting against gay marriage now just because, like, you know, they're not dumb. They know where
the winds
are blowing.
Yeah. There's no that. You gotta fight against trans rights now that you've lost the gay marriage.
Again, I'm not sure of their attitudes on that. But T-Gab.
T-Gibby Gabby.
2020
is gonna be a funny, funny one.
Can't wait.
So
she's up about 3 or 4 points in that poll I mentioned.
Oh,
in that one poll in that one state.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think polls are worth it.
Same.
Thanks so much for sitting through this long episode with us, you guys. You can find us online at Worst Year Pod on all the social media places. You know, like the Instas and the Twitters. I'm Katie Stoll.
Yeah.
You're
Dr. Mr. Cody.
And you are.
Robert Evans, and I think we all need piles of medicine and hot showers.
Oh, yeah. I'm ready for re-upping my cold medication.
I think you guys sound great.
Thanks, Cody.
You're welcome.
Uh-huh. All right, guys. We're out for the week. Until next time, remember, if you're going to join a cult that surfs.
Aloha.
I tried.
Yes.
Daniel?
Lovely.
Worst Year Ever is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene!
Gene Fodor!
Gene, was good.
But be careful, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
The CIA really need your help, Gene.
Freeze, Americano!
Gene, run!
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, this is Kurtwood Smith. You remember me from such TV comedies as That 70s Show and That 90s Show on Netflix. I'll never forget the words that my grandfather said just before he kicked the bucket. He said, "Watch how far I can kick this bucket." People ask me where I get my dad jokes from. I tell them to listen to the Daily Dad Jokes podcast. Listen to Daily Dad Jokes every day on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.